Our texts today come around, certainly the New Testament texts, in a way that I hadn't really noticed before. The two of them together come back to this whole idea of love. And as I was thinking about the Matthew 18 passage, which is a passage with a certain amount of a checkered history, in at least my experience, where often people would use just the phrase Matthew 18 as a bit of a club to beat you up with. If you're talking about sort of anything at all, if you're talking about something that needed to be changed, they say, well, why didn't you go and talk to that person? Well, maybe you should have, but sometimes it wasn't a person, and anyway, it was just a big pain. And so I sort of ignored it, because I'd seen it misused when I was younger. And one of the aggravating things, of course, is that the things that you learn when you're younger are really hard to unlearn when you're older, or at least they are for me. I didn't speak for everybody, but I've heard it's a common experience that those reactions that we have when we are younger, that we learned when we were younger, sort of stick. And in a completely sort of side note, if you will, one of the things that this reminds me of is somebody said, let's see if I can hear this, remember correctly, said when you're thinking of things, when you're reacting to things, your first thought is how you were raised. Your second thought is what you actually think. And I thought about that. That makes sense. And I realized it did. There are a lot of things that I hear them just raise my hackles, because that's just what I was used to. And when I think about it, I go, well, that's not so bad. And it used to worry me that my first thought was that way. And I found this a very helpful thing, that stuff you take within yourself when you're younger tends to stick around. So you have to relearn it. And so it was really helpful for me this week, as I was reflecting on these texts, to bring our Romans message, our Romans text, up against what we have in Matthew 18. And I always sort of charged off to the end of this passage in Matthew 18, or sort of into the middle of it, where, okay, eventually you just throw people out of the church and all that. And I thought, well, I don't think that's really what the point of the thing is. I think it's a progression, to be sure. But where it begins is that if you have a problem with somebody, you go and talk to them privately. Well, why would you do that? Well, there's lots of reasons why you might. But I think the one that Jesus is getting at here is that if you love somebody, you're not going to embarrass them in public. And if you love somebody who's done something that you don't like or has sinned against you, as the text says, if you go to that person, just the two of you, you can settle it in a way that doesn't humiliate the other person. And if that doesn't work and you are still certain you are correct and they are not, then you take a couple of other people. And the progression is one that does everything it can to preserve the original relationship. Because it's really hard to keep a relationship going if the first time you hear about it having a problem is when somebody announces it in front of everyone. But if somebody comes to you and says, when you said that, it really hurt my feelings. Or when you said that thing, I just don't see how that fits with what you say you believe. If it's just the two of you talking about it, you can reach a conclusion that allows you both to just move on with your lives in a way that doesn't involve more people than it absolutely has to. And if that isn't a way of loving somebody, I'm not sure what is. It's one of those things that says that people's feelings about themselves are important. They matter. And we need to care for them. And that's part of what Paul is talking about as well. Verse 8 says, of Romans 13, in this translation, says, "Let no debt remain outstanding, except the continuing debt to love one another." And when we think of debt, it's really hard for me to split it off from the whole notion of, money. You owe the bank for your mortgage or whatever else it might be. And if we think of it instead as an obligation, which is a synonym for debt, different connotations, so it makes it a little bit easier for us to, at least for me, to see what it's getting at. If we read it as, "Let no obligation remain outstanding except the continuing obligation to love one another," that makes it a little bit more sensible to me, or at least it brings it into an area that I find easier to deal with, that I have an obligation to love the people around me because they matter, because human beings are worthy of love, full stop, whether I know them or not, whether I like them or not even, whether I love them or not. We're called to this obligation of love because, as Paul goes on to say, for anyone who loves their fellow human has fulfilled the law. The law is this enormous catalog of things we should and shouldn't do in the Old Testament. That's what Paul's talking about. The 600 commandments, the 400 ordinances, the 10 commandments, all of these things. They're all there. Leviticus is filled with them. Exodus is full of them. And there's so many there that we wanted to make sure we got it, so we got them all again in Deuteronomy, the book that many people stall out. If they make it through Leviticus, trying to read the Bible from the beginning to the end, Deuteronomy is the one that usually gets people who make it past Leviticus. And then Paul says, takes a sort of a representative sample of the commandments and says, the commandments, don't commit adultery, don't murder, don't steal, don't covet, whatever other commandments there may be, are summed up in this one rule: love your neighbor as yourself. It all comes back to love. The commandments are based on loving the people around you as yourself. And as we all know, your neighbor is anyone that you come in contact with. Jesus told the parable of the Good Samaritan to make sure that people knew that neighbors weren't just the people you lived next to, weren't just the people you knew well, who looked like you and thought like you and you had lots of shared history with. Your neighbor is anyone that you come in contact with. And if they need your help, then you have an obligation to help them, not because you have an obligation to them, but because you have an obligation to love your fellow human beings. Jesus, when asked what was the greatest law, greatest commandment, said to love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind, and the second is as the first, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Paul is pulling us back to be reminded that this is what we're called to do. And then he adds some reasons why. He says, do this, understanding the present time, like the time that he was in. He said, according to what's going on now, we need to remember this even more, because we're closer to the return of God than we were before. We're closer to the morning than we were before. We're closer to this end of all things. And if Paul was closer, how much closer are we? And yet, that's not the only reason we do it, but it's one of the reasons. There's hardly anything that is a bit of a challenge to do that only has a single reason to do it. There's always lots of other things that come into play as well. And Paul is just helping us to see other ways to remind ourselves, to help ourselves love the people we're around. Paul's talking particularly in other of his letters about loving people in the community of faith. But here it's very clear that, just as Jesus in the Samaritan, or the parable of the Good Samaritan, said that everyone that we come in contact with, everyone who needs the help that we can provide, is worthy of love and that we are obliged to love them, Paul is coming in on that as well. And he's saying that one of the things that we do when we do this is we are putting aside the deeds of darkness. Well, he puts it the other way around. He said, let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light, and then let us behave decently. And then he gives us a list of things we shouldn't do. Well, our behaviors are complicated, to be sure, but it's hard to behave in good and bad ways at exactly the same time. In the same way that it's impossible to say nice things and bad things at the same time. If we spend our time thinking, how do I express love to people? How do I express the reality of God within me? If I want to express what it means to be a member of a community of faith, I won't have time. There won't be room. There won't be space for these other things. When we behave decently, it just pushes some of the other options, most of the other options, away as being impossible. I can't gossip about somebody at the same time that I'm talking positively about them. I can't tear you down while I'm building you up. It doesn't work that way. Now, I've spoken often about how much I dislike binaries, but there are some, and this is another one, that if we are behaving, as Paul says, if we're behaving decently as in the daytime, that means that we don't have room, we don't have the capacity, we don't have the ability to do those other things that are characterized in this passage as being in the darkness. And why do we do these things? Because we love the people around us. It all comes back to love. Kicking off a school year, and even for those of us who aren't in school, there's still something about this time of year that for lots of us has a sense of something new, of a new start. And I don't have any reason to think that any of you are not practicing this in to the best of your ability, but this is an encouragement to you and to me that as we kick off a new school year, as we move into the feeling of a new season, it's felt kind of autumnal a couple of mornings this past week. I'm going to see if I can live this out more than I have already, because there's always room for improvement, and I encourage you to consider the same. That if we believe that it all comes back to love, if we believe that the greatest commandment, that two-part thing, is to love God and to love our neighbor as ourselves, and I think we do, I'm going to see how much better I can live that out. And maybe you'd like to come along with me for the experience, to see what it's like to move into an orientation that says the people around me deserve my best just because they're there. Not because they've done anything for me so far, although maybe they have, but just because God says, if you want to be my follower, if you want to give evidence to that relationship that you have with me, with God, through Jesus, empowered by the Holy Spirit, then you're going to love the people around you, because it all comes back to love. Amen.